us pray. Lord, we know you are a God of mission. In this workshop, help us to hear your voice in others and so learn more about our call to serve you in bringing forth the kingdom. Help us see and follow you this day and always. In a number of places, there's opportunities for you to be working or talking with each other in small groups of two or three. So let's get that part set up right now. Find yourself a group of two or three to be in, and when you're doing that, look and see whether the people around you have a group of two or three to be in as well. So set yourselves up in a group of two or three. And several people have just arrived, so if you have a group of two or three already, be sure to incorporate them into the group. It can be even a group of four. There'll be a couple of places where that'll happen. This is a bit strong, but whatever. When I raise my hand like this, it's a signal for you to complete the question or sentence or thought that you're on, so that we can be back together as a whole group. The session description is, word and action are both part of Christian witness. Indeed, service often precedes words about faith. How can loving service open doors for making disciples? And this afternoon we're going to investigate that question. I'll share some thoughts about the relationship between social justice and mission. Share with you some of the experiences in the parish to which I belong of a project that we've undertaken and are undertaking. There's opportunities for you to share your experiences and to clarify your thinking. I do apologize in advance. I don't have a handout with all of the how-tos specifically worked out for you. That is to say, how to use social justice actions as a way to increase the number of disciples you have. In fact, we're going to talk about that question indeed. A brief bio of me. I'm an ordained vocational deacon. I serve on the Social Justice and Advocacy Committee of the diocese, and my parish, St. Matthew the Apostle Oriel, was in the first cohort of our diocesan version or approach to missional transformation. I have personal claim to being a traditional mid-church Toronto Anglican. I was born here, as were my parents, and were my grandparents. I sang in the boys' choir of St. Simon the Apostle, just to the east of here. My parents graduated and taught at Trinity. I graduated from Trinity. My uncle was a priest. My grandfather was dean of the cathedral from 1937 to 1961. All of that kind of background is the dirt from which we can come and grow. It is what nurtures us. It's what the resources are. But I don't think that it determines what we're going to become. But I'm part of that. I have that as my background. And I drove by St. Simon's this morning on the way here and thought, there's my old church. Somewhere along the way, I took John Bowen's Church Planting and Fresh Expressions of Church. That is to say, when I was at Trinity, I crossed Hoskin and took things at Wycliffe. I wasn't made to take Bowen's course. I must have signed up for it for good reason. But I found it to be changing, life-changing. And I hope that maybe I can be part of the what he describes in this month's Anglican as moving evangelism to Main Street. Maybe I can be part of that group. I want to start with mission. Mission as being something that God does and is doing. not particularly or not centered on a human endeavor. God is already active in the world, and we are invited to go along. If we look, there are signs of the kingdom already breaking in. I also want to start by considering the term disciple. As a disciple, as a result of belief, there is action. A disciple, in fact, means to follow. In your group of two or three, or maybe it's grown to four, and I ask you to look around and see if there's people nearby you who aren't part of a group initially, talk to each other about that question. Well, first of all, say who you are to each other, but then, what do you mean by mission, and what is a disciple? Given the introduction that mission is something that God is doing, and a disciple is a follower. Thank you. Do that. No, it's not finished. It's never finished. But what are some of the things that you talked about in your group about mission and about discipling? Face of God, going out into the world and inviting them in to share.
Not just into our church, but into the kingdom.
Into the kingdom.
Not into our building,
into the kingdom.
Yes.
Thank you. Other groups, some of the things you might have talked about. Okay, there's always motion and movement. It's not something static or set or predetermined or fixed. Is that right? Okay, so with a clear objective and goal, not something that's vague. Thank you. Other groups, some things that you talked about. So hands and feet and eyes and ears and whatnot of God as mission,
as
active mission, okay. But also mission statement. How did mission statement fit into that? Is a mission statement something the same or different? Sorry? By which I'm. Okay. Always being formed. Okay. So a mission statement isn't something that's going to be glued down or permanent forever, necessarily. Okay. Other comments? The Epistle of James is, for some, an unpopular piece of writing, an epistle of straw, but it's certainly been a text in the debate about justification by faith or by works. From James 2, "For just as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is also dead. But someone will say, 'You have faith and I have works.' Show me your faith without works, and I by my works will show you my faith. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if you say that you have faith but do not have works? Can faith save you? If a brother or sister is naked and lacks daily food, and one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, keep warm, and eat your fill,' and yet you do not supply their bodily needs, what is the good of that? So faith by itself, if it has no works, is dead." I think it comes back around, though, even better in the letter to the Ephesians, chapter 2. "For by grace you have been saved through faith. That is not your own doing, it is the gift of God, not the result of works, so that no one may boast. For we are what he has made us, created in Jesus Christ for good works, and here's the significant part, which God prepared beforehand to be our way of life. Matthew 25, the sheep and the goats, it always bothers me that you have to be separated into one or the other. I would like to be kind of halfway in between and say, I've been good most of the time, but it really worries me that it's one way or the other. Anyway, one of the key points is that the sheep ask in Matthew 25:37, when was it that we saw you hungry and thirsty? So they've already done the good work, but they've done it without being conscious that they were doing it for salvation purposes or to please the king or any other inherent thought of in advance purpose. They did it because it's the thing that they have built in for them to do. It's what they do. It's built in. Okay. Can you have faith without works? Can you have works without faith? Talk about that in your group. What are some of the things that you talked about in your group? Can you have faith without works? Can you have works without faith? What are some of the things that you talked about in your group? Thank you. Faith alone. Okay.
On one level, we're talking about how we have faith, and it has to be, I think, the works become the way in which it's exemplified. It's like evidence of our faith, but it's faith that plays a role, obviously. But then the debate came where people that do good work may not always have faith. And then we were saying, well, on one side of the argument, we were saying that God already puts the works in us to do, whether or not we do it. And then we're talking about on the other side, people that may not have faith may just do the work, like an atheist would give somebody something and may take offense by saying that people do have faith. And then we've debated that for a long time. And it's laid in the middle.
So there are people who do good works but don't have faith.
May not attribute it to faith.
Okay. Perhaps it could be said that they have it, it's just that they're not attributing it to faith. Could be. Okay. But in fact, they don't articulate that as being the why for of their works. Is that fair to say? Thank you.
We sort of said, would an atheist be meant if you caught an atheist doing something good and said, well, you must really have faith because you're doing a good work here. And they'd probably be offended by
You've got my email. This is a little project for you to do. The email's on the top. It's half facetious, but only about half, okay? The next time you see an atheist doing good work, okay, talk to them using your best and most refined, can't believe I am saying this, your best and most refined kingdom language, okay, and see what happens. I think that may be an evil thought. Process that and see. But as a thought experiment, I think it would be really interesting to see what did happen, what the response would be. I guess it would be contextual and all the rest of it, but okay. But yeah, would they is a good question. Other groups, what did you talk about in your group concerning this question? Okay, stunted, not a healthy faith without works. Okay, thank you. Other groups.
We talked about when we were looking at one have works without faith, what kind of faith are we talking about? Are we talking about self-evident faith, or are we talking about faith in the future, or faith in the goodness of people, or to do this, so I'm going to do this for them. And that's a work.
Okay, that's a really important question, isn't it? What faith are we actually talking about when we talk about faith in this question? Certainly in my experience back at St. Simon's 50 years ago, I sang in the choir, so I didn't have to go to confirmation class. I really didn't have to go to confirmation class. I was not required to go to confirmation class. There was an assumption that by being in the choir two times every Sunday, that it would, by osmosis, sink in. That question, what faith are we talking about, is in fact a key thing to talk about regularly. There's a hand there and there, so you go first. So the works then are indicative of the kind of faith that a person holds. All of the extent of it. Thank you. So Christ, in fact, sets us up, is the pattern, the more than the motivation, the underpinning for what we do. It's who we are. Thank you. Proper relationship, but we're all in the image of God. And how come they can't see, sense, or feel that?
But they can still live up that image, even if it's broken.
Okay. It's complicated. Yeah. It's complicated. Other comments? Yes.
Why do you do
So the actions, the work itself, was the same and was common amongst all the groups, but the faith base from which it was articulated that they were motivated was different. What happened after the step where the groups talked about their different motivations or the difference? Okay. Okay, so the doing of it became still was done. The work was still done, even though the faith bases were different. That did not cause a division. Okay, that's important. Let's go back to the original question: how can loving service open doors for making disciples? That's the screen, yes. Five marks of mission. It's on your handout. Five marks of mission are frameworks used to describe and encourage ministry throughout the worldwide Anglican Communion. If you look at the first two, to proclaim the good news of the kingdom and to teach, baptize, and nurture new believers, they have some things in common. If you look at 3, 4, and 5, but particularly 3 and 4, to respond to human need by loving service and to seek to transform unjust structures of society, to challenge the violence of every kind, and to pursue peace and reconciliation, you could be tempted to say that those are different from the first two. What's really interesting is that they come together as the five marks of mission. What I continue to find challenging, and what I know people that I'm journeying along with find challenging, is how to put them all together at the same time, and how not to be tempted to think about only dealing with 3 and 4, that is responding to human need and looking at unjust structures, without considering the first two. But they're there together. A common church planting strategy is to find a societal issue impacting a community, identify with it, thereby drawing people in. I've got a little quote. I've got a quote from the Church Plant Startup Kit 2007 for the Anglican Diocese of Toronto. It's no longer available online at the URL that it was 3 years ago, so I suspect that it's under revision at the moment. But anyway, let me read you the passage. Church Plant Startup Kit from the Diocese of Toronto. In the conception stage, establishing the ministry focus of the new church is essential. This involves identifying a list of needs that will serve as the starting points for connection with the target audience and lead to significant involvement with and ministry to people as a result. For example, if your community demographics indicate a high number of parents with small children, you may discover that your starting points may include parenting programs and children's ministry. Or, if you were focusing on an area with newcomers to Canada from a particular region, say East Africa, your ministry focus may need to include hospitality ministries, immigration and employment counseling, or English as a second language. It is difficult to have more than one or two focus groups in planting a new congregation. List 4 to 6 ministries that you might launch to meet those needs. Hear the same methodology in one of the books from Bowen's course on church planting and fresh expressions of church, Starting Mission-Shaped Churches. This is the practical guide to starting mission-shaped churches. And I have for you Having moved into the community, the team is able to take a read on the culture and discern how best they might serve them. Local startups often begin with easy entry activities, like the running of English classes, playgroups, homework clubs, neighborhood barbecues, cleaning up neglected or no-go areas. These activities meet genuine community needs, create community credibility, and prepare the ground for things like small group forums on spirituality or parenting or focus evangelism courses like Alpha. And a little bit later in a case study describing a particular plant in Australia, who were you seeking to reach in North Forbes is the question. And the answer was the victims of domestic violence, those with serious addictions to drug and alcohol, people who have limited understanding of healthy functioning family. I didn't have to select this target group. As it happens, it is screaming at us for help. I guess what concerns me is that is the language of target audience, finding an entry point. Is that appropriate and is that the right approach? And there's an underlying assumption, certainly in the starting mission-shaped churches, that the product, the goal, the result, the indication of success is a church plant. John Bowen's course had us, or forced us, to look at foundations in scripture and theology, not just the practicality. So it wasn't simply a how-to course. And I have some readings from another book, Church Planting, Laying the Foundations, which is also referenced too on your handout. God is the missionary who sent his son and sends his spirit into the world, and whose missionary purposes are cosmic in scope, concerned with the restoration of all things, the establishment of shalom, the renewal of creation, and the coming of the kingdom of God, as well as the redemption of fallen humanity and the building of the church. A church effectively engaged in mission will see that participating in the Missio Dei will involve shifting emphasis from a focus on the life of the local church to a concern for the world in its needs, joys, and struggles. Not infrequently, if we have eyes to see this, God is advancing his kingdom through those who may not recognize this, but whose quest for justice and wholeness, for liberty and community, is contributing towards the kingdom's advance. Mission could be reduced to soul winning, where a narrow anthropocentric understanding of evangelism prevails. Such evangelism often calls only for changes of belief and certain aspects of personal morality. But the kingdom challenges political, social, and economic values and commitments and leads to a radically new allegiance, a progressively transformed lifestyle, and different priorities. Mission can be relegated to the private sphere of the church, family and leisure interest, where larger issues of justice, peace, care for the environment, and the alleviation of human suffering are ignored. But the kingdom challenges any contemporary expression of the behavior of the Pharisees, who strained out gnats but swallowed the camels, of justice, mercy, and faithfulness. Social action projects are often seen as just that, projects which can be bolted on to churches and detached again without affecting the heart of the community or its mission. Social action initiatives that are not integrated into the core vision of the church may have the effect of making extra demands on church members who are already heavily committed in other ways, demands which do in fact detract from their evangelistic impact or involvement in other aspects of the mission and ministry of the church. Attempts to proclaim good news without demonstrating good news in practical ways will not endear churches to urban communities. And however, the kinds of social action that are taken and the attitudes with which the church operates are also of fundamental importance. Patronizing approaches, programs that are designed for the community rather than in partnership with the community, projects that create dependence rather than empowering people, and initiatives that have strings attached and use social concern as a cover for evangelizing will damage the witness of the church and ensure that any growth in membership which does occur is offset by the diminution of the church's ability to operate indigenously. Now I'll tell you a few of the experiences that my church community of St. Matthew's had. And I have to start off by saying that although some of us would have read all of that, whether we actually put all of that into practice or were reflective about that was in here all of the time is a very is very questionable. St. Matthew's is located just down the hill from our Areopagus, that is Fairview Mall. It's at the top of the hill. It's a wonderful metaphor. And that is the parking garage. And that's looking from the parking garage across the street to the area of Parkway Forest. Those particular buildings are in fact the rental replacement buildings for a very large development that's occurred or is occurring right at the corner of Don Mills and Shepherd. There were townhouses, actually small apartment buildings that had been there for 30 years, 35 years actually, that were torn down to make way for a big redevelopment. And people were offered the opportunity to relocate into these particular buildings right on Shepherd. That's a view from a grocery store, which is in the community of Parkway Forest, or from the parking lot of the Foodland, as you can see. And you can see the density or densification. We're extra urban or inner suburban. We're not downtown. We're not south of Eglinton or south of Bloor Street. But we're not suburban either in our particular area. And a major cause of all of this, or a major instigator of all of this, is the building of the Shepherd Subway. And because the subway is there, there must be development to pay the taxes which are required to pay for the subway, which is already there, hence densification. You can see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 apartment buildings from that particular view. On the side there, the display from the little plaza, which is in the area, shows Iqbal, which is a really, really good South Asian place. There's a subway. There's also a sushi house. So there's a fair bit of diversity in the community. The area is bounded, and it really is bounded, by 404, or the north end of the Don Valley Parkway, 401. So you've got 25 lanes there and 25 lanes there. On the west side, Don Mills Road has 6 lanes, and Shepherd Avenue also has 6 lanes to the north. So the community is self-contained, almost 10,000 residents. This is a picture of the school. The school is currently the only community space in the area. There is a very large park, which is just to the right or behind this, so that's a community space. But in fact, community building, this is it. Right there in the view with the crane on it is the 35-story condo tower that's being built where the 7-story older apartment buildings were. The school is certainly the hub or the center of the place. This is a view from St. Matthew's itself, and you can see the building that was in the previous picture sticking out there. It really is kind of neat that they had a huge white light on the top of it where the crane is. We could use that. I mean, when we're doing Epiphany, I mean, we had a star, and it was actually to the east of the building. This was great stuff. But the building clearly lurks over top of us. St. Matthew's is on the other side of Don Mills Road from the Parkway Forest area. there are. The street there leading up the hill, that's still the parking lot and one of the church signs. The street leading up to Don Mills Road from there, you can't take it across Don Mills Road into the Parkway Forest community. There is no formal way to cross the six lanes of Don Mills Road. No light, nothing. There is a piece in the middle for which you can. It's true. You can see there on the right that there's a single family house. The area in which St. Matthew's is located was initially, in 1965, all single family houses. Now it's, as you can see, changed. We organized a team, Parkway Forest Working Group. It involved the priest, Father Brad Lennon, who many of you would know, myself, and two lay people. We did a number of observations. We walked, we listened, we researched, we talked. We did hot chocolate at the grocery store and met a bunch of people and connected with them and took some names and whatnot. We came to the conclusion that five-story apartment building that was more than 30 years old and had a number of people in it, and also the condos next door, by the way, had a number of people in it who'd been living there for the 30 years, that it was being taken down. And what might be a good project for us to undertake was to support the dislocated residents, to help them through negotiations with the developer, and also to nurture a residents' association that we thought we could help create in the Parkway Forest area. The city councilor for the area has been deeply involved for quite some time with the developer and with negotiations through Section 37, which Rob Ford doesn't like, which got us in the community a new community center. As the Parkway Forest Working Group, we liaised with legal services and a number of other groups that were there. We got organized to the extent of getting a small group of residents who would meet regularly with the local property manager of the building to talk about how the change of was going to take place, that how their movement to a new facility, the rental replacement buildings that I showed you earlier, would happen, ironing out little bits of details and whatnot. That seemed to be going along swimmingly until the property manager had, and I believe it was under a great deal of pressure, had medical problems and suddenly retired and was replaced by a group of people from the owners who were completely disinterested in talking with the residents about moving. We had regular meetings with a group of residents from the Parkway Forest area for a year in a condo party room that happened to be arranged for by one of our parishioners. After about a year of monthly meetings of getting to know each other and talking together, we instigated the forming of an organization, we, the Parkway Forest Working Group. But then after about 6 months, that imploded and the leaders moved out of the area. We regrouped after finding the current chairperson and supporting her in her work. What happens now is that their monthly meetings in the current chairperson's party room involves the local councillor, city councillor's rep, school principal, and some residents. And what we've been involved with, we being the Parkway Forest Working Group from St. Matthew's, has been staff support. That is, I regularly exchange emails with the president of the Residents Association with suggestions as to how she might go about doing what she plans or wants to do. Obtain school permits, design and print flyers for the organization, handle the money initially, maintain membership lists, and a sounding board for the community concerns. We hosted we being the Residents Association, and be careful of that distinction there, not we St. Matthew's, but we the Residents Association, had three successful community events, barbecue, talent night, and that was in partnership with the elementary school. Some results and some learnings that came from this. Rumors surfaced in the community about our motivations, that we were out to convert the Muslims in the area. As a Parkway Forest working group, we've come to the conclusion that what makes sense is to keep going, demonstrating our commitment to the residents, and not to do anything more about such rumors. That is to say, not to identify the source and have a discussion with sources of them, but simply to continue to demonstrate our commitment to the community. Many of the already active people that our St. Matthew's group, our working group, encountered turned out to be already practicing, already involved deeply in faith groups. The current chair is a practicing Muslim. Active people who got involved in our barbecue and talent night and started organizing things turned out to belong to the Roman Catholic Church, which is right across the road from St. Matthew's. The sound man for the talent night came from Asian Corp Pentecostal Church, which meets in the school. Not much conversions happening there. Didn't find any new disciples. Volunteers for the community events continued to be a challenge, and there was a real temptation for us as church people to do it ourselves. I mean, we know how to put on an event. So we at St. Matthew's would put on the talent night. We could organize the food. We do that regularly. So let's organize the food. Really, really tempting to do that, to ignore the them versus us understanding that, in fact, our point for being involved was to collectively, as a whole, as a group, as a community, to build things together. We're not giving from St. Matthew's. We're not serving anybody well by giving an event. We may serve well by helping alongside people to come up with an event. Residents were not consistent. The residents from the Parkway Forest community were not consistent in meeting attendance. There's a sense that many are not particularly interested in wider community concerns. One actually said quite bluntly, "I am not a party planner." The school, Forest Manor, reports that parents have at the moment have not been very interested at all in the impact of the current labor dispute with the Elementary Teachers Federation of Ontario. That is to say that the fact that there are extracurricular activities have been curtailed hasn't been an issue for most of the parents. What's been an issue? The school reports that what's been a significant issue from the parents' perspective is the new anti-bullying legislation initiatives and the impact of that. There have been lots of questions about the component from parents about the components of the anti-bullying programs, which include sexual orientation education at various levels. And what they're really interested in is getting their kids out of any discussions about people who are of practices different from heterosexual. That's where their interest is, not in community concerns. I think there's an unchecked out understanding that people in the community who are in many cases recently here, the school population is about 750, and this year there've been 100 kids move in and 100 kids move out of the 750. So it's transitory. But the concern of the parents and the concern of the community tends to be focused on establishing oneself in Canada, finding jobs, food security, and security for their children. that doesn't engender a whole lot of concern about development in the area or a wider concern about the whole community. That's been a problem. What St. Matthew's Working Group did find is that we made really good connections with the city councilor, with the public school, with social service agencies in the area. That's good in the sense that we've developed a resource group for the community, but that wasn't our objective. Our objective wasn't to develop a resource group for the community. Our objective was to build up the community. We had in mind to start some prayer groups. Well, that's not come about. We had a plan to do Blessing of the Animals event in the park, and I don't hold to this. Well, I don't know what I think about this. We did much direct public relations, that is to say, passed out flyers in the park with everybody who happened to come by with a dog, saying that we were going to have a blessing of the animals at the Ball Diamond the following Sunday. Did a whole lot of that. Then when the day came, and I don't know what to hold this for, but it rained a lot. It rained a great deal. And there was thunder. And there was lightning. Now, there wasn't any lightning when we actually did the event. But it was also true that the people who came were, in fact, four or five people that we knew from the community closer to St. Matthew's on the other side of the street. How many conversions or new disciples, if that is the measure? There are two people who are now consistent church attendees and two sometimes attendees that can trace that directly to this. But if that's the measure, it hasn't been particularly successful. A really, really big problem is that even though this was a good work to involve people in the community, it did not engage the 15 regular St. Matthew's parishioners who already lived in the specific area, that is within Parkway Forest Community. All of the team members, the priest and myself and the two lay people that I mentioned initially, come from outside of the park, outside of Parkway Forest. But the people who, in our congregation, who already live within Parkway Forest, didn't find this to be an activity in which they wished to get involved. Some of our next steps, we're gonna keep going. There's an initiative to do a one-to-one volunteer reading program with the school, and what I'm finding really, really exciting about it is that the people from St. Matthew's who are interested in doing this one-to-one reading program are interested in doing it not in St. Matthew's, but in the school. And that's going to take a walk up the hill to the far side of that road there, but they're keen to do that. I think we have to observe more. I think we have to pray more. I think we have to find ways to engage our parishioners who are already there rather than have us outsiders involved. I think we have to keep asking the questions that Harold Percy had us ask a year ago here. Why are we doing it the way we are doing it? I think we need very much to look towards internal evangelism. And the other question, or one of the other questions that Percy asked, is what price are we willing to pay in order to be able to reach people? I'm not sure how much we are risking. What else would you suggest that our Parkway Forest Working Group should think about and do differently? Have a conversation. So what are some of the things that you talked about in your group?
Well,
I think what I heard you say first, though, is that that it's okay to go in with an idea or a concept if we're willing to change by what we hear. Is that fair? Yeah. Needs versus assets, I heard you say. The need to continue to proclaim underneath and to find ways to support. Right? Thank you. Really interesting development in the local community is that a food space is about to open in just nearby in the community, about two blocks north. But it will serve. But it's called a food space. It's going to have a community kitchen. It's going to have programs for gardening on your balcony and gardening in your community. It's going to have. I would call them gleaning programs, but they wouldn't call them gleaning programs, but going to farms and stuff, meetings of youth, and what's really fascinating is the Farsi cooking class, which is led by people who speak Farsi and who are attuned to concerns that the community actually has about cooking. So they're not learning from somebody like me how to cook Canadian. They're actually learning how to cook here in Toronto, given all of the resources that are there. So this is really neat. There's also, you're right, and I've left this out on purpose, there's also a food bank to serve the local community needs. What's really fascinating about this is that it's being run by three social service agencies in the area. Well, actually, Northrop Harvest is one of them. Modeled on the STOP, which many of you would know in West End Toronto, as being like a comprehensive thing. Churches are minimally involved. Some of the church representatives have been from the beginning. It's a really, really interesting question. My sense is that churches in this particular neighborhood have been tempted to withdraw into themselves. Now, right nearby are a whole lot of brand new kinds of churches. The Korean Garden Baptist Church is one example on the other side of the 404. Who are they and what are they about and what's their, I don't know. I need to, and so do we all, need to make connections and contacts with them. My point of illustrating that is that it's not been clear and it's not been easy. And I'm not sure that the same kind of resources that founded the two food banks on either side of us that are church-based are there now. But then again, I have to remember it's God's mission, not my mission. It's what God's up to. And I wish he'd stop doing new things all of the time. But let's just stay with the old things. But no, thank you for the question about that and about involving others. Collectively, it really does make more sense. Over here and then down here. It's called the Oriel Food Space, and it's built on the model of the STOP, which is in the west end of Toronto. Davenport, DuPont, help me out, somebody, quick. No? All right, Google the STOP and you will get a whole pile of stuff. Started as a food bank, but it's now multi-service. Not religious-based, though.
So my question is, I'm assuming it's being in need in that area. And then
That's a really good question. Step one is how can, well, one of the questions is how is to ask ourselves, how can we help? The second, another question to ask is, given the fact that they actually have put out appeals to the community for volunteers, and they have herds of them through the social service agencies that are already working in the community, the next question becomes, what could we do? And I would contend that as a church, there is actually very little that we can do as far as this particular food space goes. They don't need any of the resources. Well, they could use some of the money, but my goodness, do you know what they've done? They've gone out and got themselves a Trillium grant for $250,000 to renovate the place. We don't have that kind of money. They've renovated the space that they're in. They've hired a full-time coordinator. When I look at the two food banks that are church-run nearby us, they're done on a volunteer basis, not with a whole lot of money. I think your question is the right one to ask, but I think we have to, as faith groups, we have to be prepared to find out that initially they don't actually want the help that we imagine that we want to give them. That's the key. Well, what is currently the case is that they actually don't need any bodies. That's actually quite hard to take. They don't actually need us. That one's...
How do you need them?
Whoa. Say that one again. Okay, whose needs, first of all? The question you've asked is very strong.
In a way, and promote what they're doing to build up the mission that you're calling. Like, how can you integrate them in such a way to use their valuable asset to help service those who you're called to serve?
Okay, and the questions that fall out of that all over the place for me are, what is it that we are in fact being called to do? And I would contend that we're actually called to go back to the mission definition in the first place, where we're called to find out what it is that God is up to in the community already and joining in. And it seems hard for me to handle given the question asked earlier, but it's entirely possible that God is busy using people who are other than Anglicans to do stuff. And that goes to your initial point about the faith and what to do about that. That's going to be really hard. Went to the Faith in the City conference. Our time is 3 minutes over. I'm sorry. We can stick around for a little bit, but we have to carry on down the road. Went to the Faith in the City conference just a little bit ago, last week actually, organized at the Toronto City Hall. Double meaning of faith in the city, having faith in the city and faith being faith groups being in the city. Ministers stood up and talked at length about the kind of things that they were doing at his particular congregation. He talked about food banks and meal programs and all kinds of things, but he made it absolutely clear that they never evangelize. I had an opportunity to chat with him afterwards, and we actually got around to talking about how we really do preach the gospel by our actions. We do. And in many ways, we are evangelizing Let us expand the understanding of the term evangelism to include that. Loving service can potentially open doors, but it cannot do so exclusively, nor is it the only recruitment technique. We must have a strong theological base. And I think we got to go back to Ephesians. We do it because that's what we're made to do. Thanks, and have a good rest of the conference.